This morning, we're fortunate to have Laura come up and speak to us. She is a mom with three kids, and I believe they're 8, 7, and 1. Almost, they're all getting ready to change ages. But so she's in the thick of things. So she's going to be able to share some of the things that the Bible has to say about how parenting applies to our fears in our, and when we are raising kids, and to really be able to see that God cares about our kids and loves our kids more than we do, and that he has something relevant for each of us. So I'll just open up with a word of prayer, and then Laura can start. God, we're really grateful to be here this morning. We're grateful that you love us, that you love our kids, and that you gave us to them. And so we just really pray that you would help us to really have open hearts to hear from you this morning, to really be able to see that we can trust you, that you care about our kids, and that you have a plan for their lives, God. And thank you that we don't have to do this by ourselves, that you give us, you want to help us, that you give us friendships to help guide us and direct us towards you, God. Amen.
Thanks, Sherry. Is there a way that I can just stand down here closer? I do what I want. That's what my kids say to me. Is it going to fall apart? There we go. Ooh, thanks. That's fine. Well, thanks for coming out today. I like never want to leave when it's this cold outside. But it's fun to get to hang out with you guys, and thanks for being here. Hopefully we can have some good discussion and talk about this. They asked me to talk this morning about how fear and how are we confident as parents and how those dynamics play out. So just to even introduce myself, I guess, this is my family. Jake and I have two boys. They are about to be 9 and 7, and then our little girl is going to turn 2 pretty soon. So we got like the wide gamut of the young baby years where things are a lot more chaotic and crazy, definitely in the thick of it. And when I was thinking this morning, or thinking leading up to this, like, you know, maybe someone way older should talk about the fears and, you know, what has brought them confidence over the years. But then I had this thought of, like, my fears are fresh. They are happening right now. So I'm sure as, like, you know, I've come to this parenting class for years, and just it's helpful to hear, like, what are other people thinking about this stage of life and how are we handling it? So just wanted to kind of share some things that have really struck me during these more busy, hands-on, crazy years of young kids at home. It's definitely been a huge source of joy to have a family and to have little kids at home, but also a sense of confusion, like, there's some moms that just have this innate sense of what to do, and mine hasn't kicked in yet, and I don't know how to handle the different things that are coming up, and we have a lot of questions about how we should be handling things. So let's just jump in and talk about fearful parenting. You know, sometimes in our fog and in our emotional state, it's hard for us to even put words to what we're afraid of will happen. But if we can calm down for a minute and start to identify what makes us so nervous? What is it that, like, is kind of this burden or this dark cloud following us around that makes us anxious in parenting? What are we afraid of? Let's put words to it. So, one, it's easy to be afraid of our financial situation, our money. Will we have money for the lifestyle that we think kids will need to have in order to do well? Will we be able to afford the advantages or the opportunities or the experiences that are going to help them grow? Oh my gosh, what are we going to do about our debt? Will we ever be in a place where we're saving up enough for college and taking care of all of that? What about our medical bills? How are we going to, you know, provide a full life for these guys? I think that our financial lives kind of can consume us as we worry about what will our opportunities even look like. We worry about illness. I worry about this all the time. Chronic illness, sudden illness. Will I be able to know how to handle? How sick are they? Maybe it's not that bad, and then I waited too long, and now it's really bad. Or what if they develop allergies and have, like, long-term complications? What if they have a diagnosis that lasts more than, like, a week or two? And how do I help my kid endure long-term pain? What if they have different disabilities or learning issues? You know, I worry a lot about, are my kids going to have long-term struggles in this area? Oh my gosh, safety with boys. I'm like, how many times are we going to get stitches and concussions? And I don't know how we haven't had broken bones at this point, but we're worried about their safety. Are they going to be okay? You know, my kids just ride their bikes up and down the sidewalk. And I'm like, good Lord, at what age are you going to be competent to even like cross the street safely? Why are you so inattentive to your surroundings that you have no clue that you could like fall out of a tree or get hit by a car? Like you literally just walked in front of our own neighbor's car and he knows you and he stopped and it was fine. But like, when will you show some competence in these areas? And my kids are older. They should know. We are afraid of people. I worry about this a lot. Who are the people in their lives? How will they be treating my kids? You know, are they good? Will they hurt my kids? Will they, you know, harm my kids in different ways? How are my kids going to be treated by people outside of my control? I worry a lot about school. Will they flunk? Will they ever learn their phonograms? Will they struggle too much and that might be damaging to them? Will they, you know, maybe they'd be better at a different school. Maybe they'd be better with a different teacher or under a different situation. Are they actually learning anything? All they want to talk about is recess. Do they have friends? Do they sit alone at the lunch table? I think through this kind of stuff all the time. What does the future hold for them? You know, will they have what it takes to do well in the future? Will they be hindered and maybe struggle too much as they grow up? I worry about, am I doing a good job? Is there something I'm doing now that's setting them up for failure or hurting them? Is there something right now that I am not teaching them that they're really going to need later on down the road? This was the easy part of the teaching for Pep. Thinking about my fears. This is the simple part. Let's just write them all down. But it was actually really freeing to have a name and like and explain, write down, what are the main things that are coming over me like a dark fog, you know? When we think about these things, we can get pretty obsessed, and they can be like reoccurring thoughts that are really hard to shake. So we need to think about fear in kind of two ways. It should be like the indicator light on a dashboard. Like it, something is going off, indicating that something has gone awry. So we have this fearful response, and then we evaluate the situation. So some fears, immediate fears, are actually good. That determines that we need fast action. One of my boys has croup, and he's had it more than a dozen times. And if you guys know or have had that, you know the terrorizing feeling of your kid waking up at 2 a.m. and they can't breathe. And they're hysterical, and they like lack air, and you don't know how much oxygen they're getting. And you wake up, and you jump out of bed. And that fear response is good because it means that action is needed right now. We need to do something about it. And so you go through all your tricks, the steam in the shower to help them breathe, or 2 a.m., bundle them up and sit on the front porch for a few hours hoping that the cold air opens up their airways again, or kind of like quickly going through your checklist and at what point do we need to go to the ER, like get a breathing treatment. Parents with kids with asthma totally know this fear. Is my child getting enough oxygen? Are they okay? Are they able to breathe deeply? And that adrenaline propels us to act quickly because the situation warrants fast action. Some kids who have really serious allergies, their parents need to act quickly if they come across a bad allergen. Get the EpiPen, call the squad. You have like your list of things that you do very quickly. So it's not always bad that the light goes off and we are fearful about something, because there are some things like get the tree, the kid out of the tree real quick before he falls. Like there will be times in parenting where you have to run and act quickly. What I want to talk about today are more these chronic, persistent, even when you act, you still feel the weight of all of those fears. Even when you've done something about it or prepared, you still feel that rush of anxiety, that like unable to settle down and relax and enjoy what's going on with your kids. You feel things are out of your control and you kind of have persistent plaguing negative thoughts. And those can play out in maybe sleeplessness at night, that you rethink your day and what could have gone down or what could have been better or whatever. So these persistent fears, even if I did the right thing, I'm still feeling anxious and worried about it and fearful for my kids. This is super interesting. The American Psychiatric Association ran a poll on 1,000 U.S. residents in 2017, and they found that nearly two-thirds of Americans are extremely or somewhat anxious about the health and safety for themselves and their families. And more than a third were more anxious overall than last year. They also noted that millennials were the most anxious generation. In 2018, the same poll was repeated. Anxiety was shown to have risen again by another 5%. Millennials were revealed to still be the most anxious generation. So we not only ourselves have fear, but we are in a culture of fear around us. If you think about most of like parenting ads or advertisement, it has a fear angle to it. You need this because your kid will blah, blah, blah if this doesn't happen, and buy our product and save yourselves from this bad situation that could happen. They know that we're scared and they advertise to that appropriately because it works. So we have our own anxieties, and as a culture, we're becoming more worried. We're becoming more stressed out. So what do we do about this? We need to consider, how are our fears affecting us? How does this look in our lives when I am being overly fearful about a situation or consumed by my fears? What happens in my life? So actually, I wanted to pause here, and I think that we're like close enough we can talk. But I was wondering if you guys had symptoms in your life or negative aspects of how fear has affected you as a parent. Do you guys have any ideas, or would you be willing to share maybe how fear has played a role in your life or your parenting? Yeah, Paula.
Sometimes I have one kid, and so like,
can
you wait for the microphone?
Oh, sorry.
So one of my big fears is like, my kid being abducted or something crazy like that, and I wouldn't be able to fight off the person who's trying to take him. And so so I'll think about, like, do I really want to go to Walmart with him by myself today?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm looking around when I get out of the van, and I'm, like, holding onto his hand with a death grip into the place, and, like, he's like, you cannot leave me in the store. So that follows me around. I'm a lot less anxious when my husband is with me on those trips.
Yeah. So we got in public, and we're worried that someone's going to take our kids, or in my case, that they're going to run off and I'll never find them. Or, you know, you go to the zoo on those really crowded days and you're like, good Lord, if my kid walks more than 2 feet away, I won't find them because it's so crowded. Yeah. So it affects how relaxed and how we are in public. Any other ideas? Should we do mics or do we need to shout it out? Oh, here's one.
Sorry. I've seen sometimes where it can just kind of negatively impact my marriage too, because maybe I have all these like super deep fears about this thing or that thing with one of my kids. My husband's like, what are you talking about? You know, so then we kind of have these disagreements about what's reality, and it usually ends up being pretty good, but it like kind of just causes some tension at times.
Yeah. Why aren't you more afraid of this? Or why aren't you taking care of this for them? Yeah. We definitely squabble about that kind of thing. Like, weren't you worried about this? Why didn't you... I don't know, whatever. We judge each other's parenting because they should have been more prepared and safer. Yeah.
I was just thinking that sometimes I feel like I get so afraid of, like, I don't know how to handle this situation. I could do this, or I could do that, or I could do that. Maybe I should try this. And then I kind of just end up doing nothing.
Yeah.
Like, it almost causes me to inaction. I just freeze up because I don't know what to do.
We totally freeze. Absolutely. I'm glad you said that. Yeah. Too many options, too many possibilities, too many things could go wrong, and all of a sudden we're just not doing very much of anything. Yeah.
I was just thinking that I can't turn off my brain, so it just keeps rolling and rolling and rolling, and it really zaps my energy.
Yeah.
And kind of takes me out of even being able to like really enjoy my relationships or anything that's really going on in my life, because I just have... I can't get myself out of that loop.
Yep.
And I get really irritable when anybody's trying to come in and disrupt my negative thoughts.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I just want to keep thinking about this thing, even though it's causing so much anxiety, because I want to control it.
Absolutely. It totally robs our mental space and what we can, you know, think about other things, or it takes away from a relaxed feel that we have around our kids, and we're stressed and we have this tape rolling over and over and over. I totally agree with that. Yeah.
I think it also affects our kids. I just think about being on the beach with my two young sons a couple summers ago and just fearing that they were going to drown, just, you know, not being able to trust your kids, not giving them that. It's kind of taking away from them, and I feel like hindering their growth in a way if you can't trust them
Absolutely. So we came to the beach, we're on vacation, but don't do this, and I'm worried, and don't do that because I'm worried. And all of a sudden, they're like, what can I do here, Mom? Like, you're not letting me enjoy this or try that out. Yeah, here's some things I had on my list. It limits our options, and it makes us a little bit more controlling. I don't know if we can do this. That might be too dangerous, so we're not going to try it. Or it shapes our perspective. Something bad is always around the bend. I don't know what it is, but I know something will happen, and I'm even predicting future activities. It affects how we handle situations. If I think that this food has too many chemicals, we're not going to eat it. If these people aren't safe, we're not going to hang out with them. If going to the zoo might mean that you will wander off from me, then we're not going to go to the zoo. That we start limiting what we can do or what we can handle in different situations. It actually doesn't increase our discernment. Sometimes we think like, oh, no, please, I'm just being realistic. I just have a better beat on things. People are way too optimistic, and I just understand the situation so much better. But it doesn't. It doesn't lead to more thoughtful planning. It doesn't lead to more creative solutions in our parenting. It just leads to more stress and more inner anxiety and turmoil. It doesn't lead us, yeah, to thoughtful planning. So how do we live like this? This really robs us of our joy, of our relaxed downtime with our kids. We've been commissioned with this awesome responsibility of raising these kiddos, and they're hilarious and fun, and they bring this amazing family dynamic that we get to be a part of. So when we are all tied up in fear and stress and anxiety with our worries, it's a hard way to live. And honestly, the Bible says that we don't have to live like this. It has an answer and it has input for our situation. I was looking through and I found this, this passage in Proverbs 31 talks about this amazing spiritual woman. And I wanted to just, get a snippet of who she is or something that gives us insight. So it says here, she is clothed with strength and dignity. She laughs without fear of the future. She speaks and her words are wise. She gives instruction with kindness. She's careful and watches over her household and suffers nothing from laziness. And right away we're like, yeah, okay, that's really amazing. I would love to be like that. Look at these qualities of this woman. She has strength and dignity. She speaks and her words are wise. I would love that. She gives instruction with kindness. She carefully watches over her household. The people around her benefit from her. She's diligent. But what really struck me in this is this part that's underlined. She laughs without fear of the future. What a total difference and a great counteroffer to our rolling tape of stress and worry. She looks at the future lightheartedly, casually, like whatever. Just the certainty that whatever comes down the pipeline, I'm fine. She's, cheerful about it. She doesn't think that it's that big of a deal. What is that secret? What does she know? Another author in the Psalms talks about it more explicitly. He says, God is our refuge and strength, always ready to help in times of trouble. So we will not fear when earthquakes come and when the mountains crumble into the sea. Let the oceans roar and foam. Let the mountains tremble as the water surges. And you're like, what? Earthquakes, when the earthquakes come? When the mountains crumble into the sea? Like, just let the oceans roar, whatever. Let the mountains tremble as the water surges. No big deal. That sounds terrifying, actually. But look at the first verse up there. God is our refuge, our safety, our security, our safe spot and place to be. That's what refuge means. He's our strength. And because of this, always ready to help in times of trouble means that whatever comes next, this author is saying, I'll be fine. I'll be okay. If God is my refuge and my strength, when earthquakes come, not if they come, but when earthquakes come, I'll be fine. I'll get through it. This other author in the Psalm says this, praise the Lord. Blessed are those who fear the Lord, who find great delight in his commands. They will have no fear of bad news. Their hearts are steadfast, trusting in the Lord. Their hearts are secure. They will have no fear, and in the end, they will look in triumph on their foes. These authors have something. They found something. Look at this. They have no fear of bad news. I'm always sitting around waiting for bad news. Something is going to happen. We're going to get, parent-teacher conferences are today, actually. What are we going to find out about how they're doing in school? And, there's always something around the bend that's going to come our way. But to live like this, confident, I'm not worried about what's coming next. I'm not dwelling in that. That's not where my fear is. this is a huge counteroffer. What an amazing, you know, opposite offer that God has to what we are currently struggling with and going through. So now's the part of the teaching that was a little bit trickier. What is confidence? What does confidence look like, and where would we get that? I wanted to start real basic, honestly, and talk about the definition. What does confidence even mean exactly? What are we trying to hone in on? So I looked it up on the internet, and this is what I found. The feeling of belief that one can rely on someone or something, a firm trust, the state of feeling certain about the truth of something. Now, this is a little bit different than what I expected, honestly, because this is something outside of myself. This isn't my school choices, our food choices, the neighborhood that we've selected to raise our kids in so that we can control and know that we're in a good spot. This isn't our superior abilities or skills or our innate talents as parents that we're passing on to our kids. This is a feeling or belief that we can rely on someone or something else outside of ourselves. This is where our confidence will come from. The psalmist clarifies real verbatim. That's right, that's what it is. For you have been my hope, sovereign Lord, my confidence since youth. The way that he was able to have this certainty that when bad times come is because of this, that the Lord has been his confidence since his youth. Jeremiah goes on to say, but blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is in him. So blessed can also be translated, but happy, but glad, but joyful is the one who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence comes from him. So we need to stop and think about who is God, because he has given them, these people of the Old Testament, these abilities to handle difficult situations with this strength, with this certainty, and with confidence. So let's stop and think about who is God. First of all, he desires to be reconciled with all people. He loves us. We are his good creation and his kids. Our world is away from God right now. It's broken. We aren't born into a relationship with him. We can look around our world very easily and see that things have gone awry, but that God is at work in the world calling all people, I love you, I care about you, I want to have a relationship with you. God offers us this relationship where we receive forgiveness and all of our wrongdoings and future wrongdoings are not counted against us. That we're forgiven and loved and accepted. And what he wants is this reconciled relationship where we are bonded to him and he becomes our loving parent. That he is our dad who knows us, who knows what's good for our lives. Where we have felt insecure, he provides our total security. Where we have felt unloved or unlovable, he provides this eternal love and ministers to us like a dad. In the New Testament, one of the authors calls him Abba, which just means like dada or daddy, like a child running up to the parent at the end of a long day. In God and in this relationship that we have with him, we find our deepest needs to be met. Our sense of self and security are become whole again. He is working to establish that, and he gives us this view of us that he has to replace our negative view of ourselves. Where we are constantly feeling inadequate and stressed and under turmoil, he says, you're my beloved kid, and I have a way out for you. I want to be there for you. I view you so differently than your own negative view of yourself. He also gives us direction for our lives. We look at our kids, and we're like, these kids need so much direction. And he looks at us, and he says, I know what you're looking for. I know the direction that you're after, and I have it for you. I can give it to you. I can show you the direction that you've been seeking. So, armed with this new relationship with God, armed tapping into his love for us and his security for us, so what? Our fears just go away? We're suddenly never fearful again? What if the things we fear actually do happen? Because some of them will. We're still in a broken world. Our kids will still get sick. Negative circumstances will happen to our families. And sometimes there are actual tragedies. And tragedies happen to people who have a relationship with God the same way that they happen to everyone else. You know, we are not exempt from the brokenness of this world. God has something to say here, too. One, we see that God has special provisions in hard times. There have been times in my life where I have gone through like real long-term chronic illness. And it was crazy to see just, you know, things that I could not have planned for. Friends bringing over meals and babysitters and family, neighbors coming over to help talk, you know, through kind of the stress of all of that. God knew what I needed, and not a minute before, but as I was in the thick of it, resources became available. Jake and I have gone through times of loss, and that was like super painful. And it was crazy to see how many ways God was showing us, I care about you, I care about your pain. I want to put people in your life who've gone through similar things to counsel you, to comfort you, to help you, that we had what we needed. It didn't make it the pain or losses go away, but it meant that we can get through this life with the resources that God will show us. I love these promises that it has, that God is near the brokenhearted. That 2 Corinthians 1 talks about God as being the God of all comfort, that he's dying to lavish this comfort and provisions on his kids if they're interested in that. We see that the Holy Spirit is now bonded to us, and we are stronger and more able to handle things than we would have if we were just on our own. That we can get out of bed, we can face the difficult and the pain and the issues that come up in our lives because we have been strengthened to do so in a lot of ways. We also see God's promises that he is at work in this world redeeming bad situations. We see all the time people coming out of really negative backgrounds, and they find healing and redemption, and they go on to have healthy marriages and healthy families. God is at work redeeming even in the brokenness and the pain of this world. So with this, we shift our perspective a little bit. Yes, the world is still broken, and I expect that things will come along and they will hurt us. But God's goodness will still prevail. And armed with this fresh perspective of God's goodness, we commit our lives and we say, okay, I'm no longer going to be held back by my fears, but what can I do? What is this awesome job that I've been given? What's my calling? How can I help out my kids? And we feel, you know, renewed in a sense of I can look at the job ahead and the complicated task of parenting with a sense of we can do this. We can handle it. We have new creativity when we're not held back by fear. We have new ideas when we're not being paralyzed by the roll of negative thoughts that are going through our mind. So we look at the challenges that face our kids with a fresher perspective, with a sense of freedom from the things that were holding us back in fear, and we can start thinking through what direction should I give my kids? What things would help them and prepare them for the challenges that are going to face them? And so we start, first of all, what already is shaping our kids? Our kids are not raised in a vacuum. They are being shaped by a lot of the influences and the people and the ideas and our culture. Honestly, they're also being influenced by our fears. When we are super fearful, our kids pick up on that, and then they show sort of the same symptoms that we do when we're fearful. So that is unfortunate, but it definitely happens. Our culture around us is full of ideas and is definitely trying to influence in a lot of ways. Our culture has ideas about money and what makes someone happy. Lots of ideas about sexuality and career and how we should handle our different frustrations. Our culture has a lot to say about these things, and our kids are going to pick up on that. Do we want our culture, which honestly is kind of dark in a lot of these ways, to be the voice that shapes our kids? Do we want our fears to shape our kids? No. These are our kids, and we're going to be there and think through creatively directions so that they have an alternative to all of this, so that they can see things through a new lens. Now, when we see obstacles and problems come our ways, we're going to use them as opportunities to teach and equip and train our children. When our kids are squabbling and fighting, it's so frustrating. And we just want to say, stop fighting. Each one of you sit down for a minute and take a time out. But now we realize when the problems come up under my roof, that's great. We're going to talk about it and explain and teach relational skills and help them resolve conflicts and help them know how to handle so that when they're grown-ups, they've already had practice in conflict resolution. They already have, you know, practice in developing relational skills. So when they're sick and they're, you know, debilitated or having a hard time, we talk them through, you're right, this is a broken world, and it sucks to be sick, but this doesn't define you. And we can find endurance, and we can live with a level of sickness in our lives and still have good lives. So when bad things happen, we use them as opportunities to talk our kids through what they're going through and strengthen them. So this is where we kind of take a pause. What is the current cultural trend? What do we need to prepare our kids for? Will they have a critique of our culture? Will they have a realization that the, you know, mass media doesn't have it all figured out? And will they have an alternative to what our culture has to offer? Will they have a different perspective when our culture says, this is the best way to handle anxiety, and yet it's not making a big difference? Will they know, there's actually a lot of other ways that I could handle my anxiety, and they work a lot better? So this was something super interesting that Jake and I have been thinking through. We serve in student ministries here at our church, and so over the years we have gotten to see like a ton of high school and college kids come through our Bible study every week, and it's been interesting to see how like our little kids, what they're going through and what they need, and then also this like batch of kids coming through student ministries and what they're going through culturally. It's different. You know, when I was in middle school and high school in the 90s, which I assume everyone's my same age, and we all went through middle school and high school in the 90s, it was a different set of challenges. You know, there are some temptations and some struggles that stay the same, but the avenue that they're, like, coming at our kids has really been different. And we need to think through, okay, I remember having dial-up internet and having to yell at my mom, get off the phone! Get on the internet. And that's just totally different than what our kids are facing. And the majority of kids are raised on phones and iPads, and they do all their homework on that. And they are constantly have entertainment available. And it used to be whatever was on TV. If that's what you wanted to watch, that was all that was there. And it was boring. So you went and go do something else. So when we think about our culture, and I see these kids in our groups, it's helpful to identify the common things they're up against and then look at my 9-year-old. It's not going to be that long until he's going to be facing a lot of these things. And it's been helpful to see, like, what is he going to need to know? So when he is in this situation in 8, 9, 10 years, he has at least some idea of what to do, and he's not totally bummed out or consumed or swept away by it. Here are some of the challenges that our kids are going to face. This is not an exhaustive list, but this is a moment for us to join forces and be creative and think about ways that we can prepare our kids so they're ready and they're not consumed by fear when they face them. Some of it is IT use. You know, this gets brought up a lot at this parenting class, actually. There's been a few lectures just on the influence of IT and how that plays out, and I would really recommend finding those teachings. They're all online. One result is that it has like a shorter attention span. These kids are used to watching clips in like really like short video increments, and that's funny, and then I'm moving on to the next really short clip. And so thinking through and having to sit down and think about a complex issue, they're bored and they don't want to do that anymore. You're having the time to like sit and work out a conflict with someone that's just so uncomfortable. They wouldn't want to do that. Pornography is different now. The access, the availability, the temptation, that it's not just boys, it's girls. Everyone is being exposed to this, and we should have something to say. Money and spending is super confusing. You know, even as an adult, I still feel like money and spending is confusing. And these kids don't really have a lot of ideas of how to plan out their lives and be prepared or what they should spend money on. A lot of them are really comfort driven. Where I was talking to a girl who has a high school Bible study, and they invited a bunch of people, like, come out, let's have this awesome Super Bowl party. We'll make a ton of food, and it'll be great, and all your friends from school will be there, and do you want to come? And the kid was like, no, and just laughed at her, like, are you crazy? I don't want to go to a Super Bowl party. I can watch the Super Bowl from my room with my blankets on my own. Why would I go out in public and hang out with other people? Which to me is like crazy. Like, I just want to hang out with my friends all day long. But that's the new norm. It's more comfortable to relate online a little bit and text back and forth, but then to stay in the comfort of my own home and not have to go out, not have to have those like awkward interactions of making a new friend and not knowing if we have anything in common and feeling uncomfortable until we establish a kind of a bond or something like that. One thing that's really coming up a lot is an inability to handle negative emotions, that they are not sure what to do when they're stressed. They're not sure what to do when they're nervous or sad or struggling or anxiety, and they don't have a lot of ideas of where to turn to, honestly. So, you know, some of the symptoms that come out of that is like less social engagement and like not a lot of relational skills. Some of these guys come to a group and they're on their phone or they don't know like how to make eye contact and sit down and have a conversation where you're exploring and getting to know the person who's next to you. I think that these came up in a lot of different ways when we were growing up. It's just a different presentation, but they're things that we can prepare for and have our kids be strong in by the time that they're grown up. Some, you know, how does this like look? A lot of these kids aren't getting driver's license. They don't want to drive. They want their parents to drive them around, or they're content to stay home. Not a big deal. But that eagerness of like, I want my independence, and I can drive, and I can go, and I can pick up my friends, and we're all going to go to the movies or whatever, that drive to go out and try things is not, it's not the same. They're happy staying home. They're happy being in the comfort of, you know, their living rooms or whatever. And this is like a generalization. Not every kid is like this all the time or whatever. But it's helpful to think about, like, if this is going to be a trend, then what do we want to do about it? Yeah, more easily anxious around people, more uncomfortable in social settings. And not in a big hurry to move out. So that, like, strike out on your own, that exciting, like, I want to try and live with my friends. And even if I'm eating ramen for a year, like, I just want to hang out with my buddies and make it work in college, that people are more nervous about that. That doesn't sound quite as appealing. So we look to God and say, okay, here's some things that I want to be prepared for, and I want my kids to be prepared for, and I want them to know about. And God's like, I have a ton of direction. I can help you with that. That's not a problem. We see right away this instruction dating back to, you know, the Old Testament. Deuteronomy says, so commit yourselves wholeheartedly to those words of mine. Tie them around your hands. Wear them on your forehead as reminders. Teach them to your children. Talk about them when you are at home and when you're on the road and when you're going to bed and when you're getting up. Write them on your doorposts of your house and on your gates, so that as long as the sky remains above the earth, you and your children may flourish in the land the Lord swore to give your ancestors. It's this idea of we just talk about it a lot. We see the truths of God, and we're engaging our kids about it. I don't know if I'm ready to write it on my doorposts, but the notion is it's readily available. It's something that's commonly brought up and talked about. Who's God? What does he say about our negative emotions? How does he help us deal with our stress? How can we handle these situations that we're up against, that we're constantly dialoguing with our kids about these things? That's the heart of what this passage is trying to say. So we teach them relational skills. We, you know, interactions with siblings is going to give us plenty of opportunities. We don't have to search very hard for a chance to explain, why was it hurtful that you lied to your brother? Why was it hurtful that you threw his Lego castle on the ground and it smashed everywhere? How do we talk to each other? And let's, you know, you mediate some of those conversations for a few years, and then they kind of get the hang of it and they start talking about it with each other. We teach friendship building skills, how to start a conversation. You know, my son was sitting at the lunch table and feeling kind of left out, and we had to realize, like, this doesn't actually come as natural to people as we think. So for my more introverted son, how do you, you know, who are the friends that you usually sit next to? What are things that they're interested in? What can you ask them about their lives? And, like, really break it down. How do you start a conversation with someone? For, I don't know if this is more common with boys or not, but it seems like it. Make eye contact. The people don't know you're talking to them if you're, like, all over the place and not really looking. Again, it seems like a simple thing, but teaching our kids to make eye contact, to engage and to look at other people, that they would have a curiosity. I want to learn more about this friend of mine, or what their trip was like, or why they're interested so much in baseball, or what this, you know, what's been going on in their lives. Teaching our kids to have some of these relational skills will go a long way for their future. We teach them at a young age that time spent with people is a major life priority. That if our friends are out, we're going to turn off the TV and we're going to join them, even if they're doing a game that we don't really want to do right now. That we like hanging out with our friends, and we're going to build a lifestyle around, you know, having people over, going out, meeting people, spending time with people. That the people in our life are important, and we have a lot of time that we're happy to spend with them. So that cuts into some things that are, you know, other things in our lives that we could be doing. Maybe we cut back on something else so that we have more downtime to spend with our neighbors or to be around the house when you know, someone stops by or whatever. Or we schedule ahead more hangouts with our friends and moms, and sometimes it isn't like a perfect match with all the kids, but they can learn to make friends with people who aren't exactly their same age or in their same interest group. That's actually helpful for them too. One thing that comes up a ton, and I'm sure our households are going to provide plenty of chances for this, dealing with hurts and building some relational endurance. Yes, it is very annoying that your brother did that to you, but this time you need to overlook an offense. You don't have to go back and like berate him for stepping on your toe this time. Or, you know, we're in like this bickering age of like, you sat on my side of the car and I was going to sit there. And okay, that's something that we can overlook. Next time if you want to sit there, you can ask and whatever. But there are so many times where we say hurtful things, that we do hurtful things that don't actually have to be a big deal. And God knows the people in our life who have overlooked the stupid things that we've said to them, the offenses that we have done, not super maliciously, but just because we're kind of careless and we don't always realize the impact our words have on others. And teaching our kids, like, yeah, you can go back and correct that person, or you could let it go this time, and it doesn't actually have to be that big of a deal. That being in community means we're going to hurt each other's feelings, and it's actually not the end of the world. Thank God our friends are willing to forgive us when we hurt their feelings. So we help them work through basic emotional things that come up in relationships by some of this stuff. There's awesome proverbs that talk about overlooking an offense and how glorious it is for the person who's willing to do that. So we can extol those things. Proverbs has this awesome dichotomies of the lazy and the diligent and also the fool and the wise. And reading through the Proverbs for myself was super helpful. And then reading it through the lens of like, how do I talk about this with kids, was really great. And some of it is that we do need to teach them some functional skills. You know, laundry, dishes, cleanup, basic cooking, food safety. Our kids can be pretty competent to handle some of these things. You know, they're going to make a mess. They're going to do a crazy job. But even like, you know, my two-year-old, she can like drag the laundry basket down when we're walking together, or we have one of our boys mop the floor. And of course, it's terrible. It's not like they're doing an amazing job. You're not having them do it because you really need their expertise and help. But he gets out the mop and whatever, does his job, and it's kind of crazy. But he feels like, I could do this, and I offered help to my family. And it really only took me 2 minutes to go over it and have it like be a good job or whatever. Some stuff that they can do, you know, they can do basic stuff like raking leaves, or they love being able to like help shovel snow, yard work, garden care. It's honestly nice to be out in the sun and being in the yard anyways. And even if it's only like first they do it for 5 minutes and then they can do it for 10 minutes and then they can do it for 15 minutes, you're building this idea that your contribution to our family makes a difference. You helping out the people around you is super helpful. We don't always have to be entertained. We don't always have to be doing things that we really like to do. I don't like doing laundry. But when we all come together and serve, one, it frees us up to do other things with our time. But also, you matter. What you do in this family matters, and it's super helpful. Last week, we, you know, have just had the longest, sickest winter ever. And it's always cold. Apparently, winter's never ending. And one of my kids got the stomach flu and had all kinds of disgusting things happening in the bathroom. And I told my husband, why don't you go to home church tonight? I'm going to stay in with these kids. And my baby, who might hear this one day, took off all of her clothes and went to sleep without her diaper on in her crib and woke up an hour later cold and wet, because that's what happens when you take off all your clothes. So I walk upstairs, and the bathroom needs massively sanitized. It's disgusting. And my daughter is soaking wet and cold and hysterical. And like, I don't have enough hands, and Dad's not here right now. And so I peek in, and my oldest son, who's supposed to be sound asleep, is definitely awake. Like, hey, could you help me for a second? I could really use another set of hands. And he like, yeah, of course. So I changed Louisa and put her in warm jammies, and he holds her, and she is hysterical and mad. But then that buys me time so that I can flip over the crib and put on new sheets and get the blankets and all this wet stuff and sanitize the bathroom and take care of things. And the look of pride on his face, that he was the one who got the baby calmed down and under control, and she just like nuzzles into his shoulder and is just laying there and is like, this is it, man. We're a team. That the well-being of one is the concern of all, that we all succeed and fail together. And he was just like so proud that he had something to offer. And I keep thinking, why am I trying to do everything when they get this huge sense of family identity when they help out, that he can minister to his sister in a super helpful way? So finding ways to give to empower them, like, yeah, what you say matters, what you do matters, how you talk to your siblings matters, the things, you know, it builds a sense of confidence that they are capable of doing a lot of really good things. When the time comes, helping them achieve these milestones, get your driver's license, you can hold down a job, you're competent to take care of some of these things, and I'm not going to make home life so comfortable that you don't want to do this. Show them that their contribution matters. God gives us direction, and one of the best things we could do for our kids is we have 18 years at home with them. We can teach them who God is, why he has made a difference in my life personally, and what he wants to do and how he wants to make a difference in your life. So we go through salvation. What is that? What is salvation? What is grace, this unmerited gift that God just wants to give us? Why? Why would he want to do that? The cross? What does that mean? What are the implications of the cross? Why was he so concerned that I lied and that's a problem? Or what does reconciliation to God look like? Is God distant? Does God care? Is he involved in my life? We can talk through basic Bible overviews. There are so many big themes of forgiveness, so many themes of redemption, so many themes of people in the Bible who have majorly screwed up and God still loved them. What a relief to know that. There are so many ways that big people of faith that are praised forever for their, you know, amazing things that they've done have had huge moral failure, huge things and setbacks in their life. And our kids can know and have a context like, if I screw up, I'm still going to be loved. If I screw up really bad, there's still a way back from that. There's still a way to recover from my mistakes and the things that I've done. We find key verses over and we repeat them over and over. You know, be anxious for nothing. The peace that surpasses understanding will guard your heart. That my kids know that, and they say that when they're having a hard time. I don't have to be worried. I can talk to God. I know he'll bring me peace. How to pray, when to pray, what does that look like? That our kids get to learn how to have their own conversations with God. Yeah, you should tell God you're having a hard time in school. You should tell God you're worried about your friends. You should tell God that the storm outside is making you a little nervous. Whatever. You start your own dialogue and start talking to him yourself too. We teach our kids at a young age that the needs of others matter to us, that God is concerned for us and he has a role for us in the lives of the people around us. When they're having a hard time, that matters. You know, when there's like a new mom has a baby and we're like making dinner, it's my turn to make them dinner, and it's this frantic rush and none of the kids are dressed and we have to get in the car and take them. I don't want to go. And like, oh my God, just get in the car. We have to deliver this dinner. I don't want to. That's fine. I don't really want to sometimes either. But remember how awesome it was when people showed up at our doorstep when our baby was born? And we want to be there because this is a sensitive time in someone's life. They're not sleeping, they're tired, they're exhausted, and this can make a real difference. Then, you know, they get in the car more reluctantly. The complaining sometimes dials down. But if we're slowly having these conversations, it's not like they're going to get it the first time. Whatever. Maybe we have to say it 100 times. This neighbor has this big situation going on. What can we do to help? This neighbor has this situation going on. How can we be a part of that? And having them think through the needs of others play a role in our finances and our time and what we choose to, you know, orient our life around. And we're going to be there for that. We can also teach them, and this is really important, teach them God's role in suffering. They're going to suffer, and they are going to be really confused about that. What do we say to them when they pray for an illness to go away and it doesn't? What do we pray for them when they have a problem and they've asked God, you know, my son has prayed, please make school easier for me for months. And I don't know if school is going to be a lot easier for him. I think that he might struggle a little bit in school and that has to be okay. That we give him language that, you know, we all have different strengths and weaknesses. And if this is an area that you struggle in, that's fine. Everyone actually has different areas that they struggle in. And that doesn't mean that God forgot you or ignored you or doesn't care about the problem you're going through. We don't want them to perceive that God failed them or gave up on them. Let's look for ways that he has actually helped. Oh, wow, your tutor gave you this huge prize because you got to the next level in reading? Well, that's a great provision for your hard time. Or, you know, it meant that you could hang out with this friend at recess. That's another good thing that came out of this hard situation. So talking them through so when they encounter pain in their life, they have some idea that God is on their side and that there is a way to get through it. We teach them about the brokenness of this world. You know, there's all these windstorms this winter, apparently, and the tree outside was, like, swaying really heavily, and he's like, it's going to come crashing down in my house, you know, in my room. And immediately I just wanted to say, like, oh, my God, it's so late. You just need to go to bed. It's fine. We're going to be fine. But we have had a tree that's fallen down, so I guess this fear is a little bit more reasonable. But just talking through, like, yeah, what would happen if the tree fell on our house? Well, we'd probably go to grandma and grandpa's house. Yeah, isn't that great? They live so close. Well, then what would we do? Well, we would have to just hire someone to come fix our house. Yeah, and then what would we do? Well, then, you know, maybe it would be, yeah, we talk about, like, we have insurance, and there are ways that we would be taken care of even if the tree did fall on our house. Illnesses, you know, I don't know why, but first grade in our school, like, everyone had pneumonia, and lots of them were hospitalized. And my sons were like, oh, I've had pneumonia. Will I be hospitalized? What's going to happen to me? And be like, well, I don't know. If you do get pneumonia, then I guess you're going to have to be like Max, who's playing on the iPad and watching movies in the hospital. And look, his friends came to visit him. We have good doctors. We have good insurance. I think that you'll be okay just like he was okay. When they are fearful, we want to shut it down and say, like, don't be afraid. It's going to be okay. But instead, like, no, we actually have a lot of options even when bad things happen to us. Some things will go wrong, but God will be there to help us figure it out, and we can talk to them about that. And one day, we don't have to worry about trees falling on our houses. And one day, you're never going to get sick again. And one day, you're going to ride your bike, and if you fall off, it's not going to hurt. And we can talk about what is heaven going to be like and how amazing that we get to look forward to eating whatever you want, even if you're allergic, or, you know, running and never having pain again, or all of the cool things that they can start getting excited about. So here's some things. These are books that my husband and I are working through right now. Part of it is so that we can, like, learn language. How do I explain this to a kid again? Or, you know, what's the simplest way that I can explain without, you know, being all over the place and going on rabbit trails, which is what I always do. You know, the Action Bible is great. My boys love it. Then just finding, like, okay, could we read the New Testament this year? Would that be a reasonable goal? Or can we read one book that would help explain or give them reasons why it's smart, like, the Bible has answers for our difficult questions, or that there is evidence to believe that Christianity even is true at all? So these are some things that we've liked and enjoyed. The Bible Project, I don't know if you guys have ever seen this. I personally think it's really edifying for myself. These guys really know their audience. They make these videos that are like 4 minutes, 5 minutes, but they cover these massive themes, and it's visual, and it's really well done. It's not cheesy or some weird churchy thing. They are, like, you know, no Hebrew and Greek, and they bring a lot of content to their teachings and their cartoon versions. So the Messiah, that one on the bottom, it starts off in the Garden of Eden. When did God first promise that he was going to redeem this broken world? And then it goes all the way through to the end, and, like, when we're in heaven and we're reconciled with God. And every time the Messiah has been involved in the promise that God is reconciling people, it's, like, displayed in this, like, five-minute video. So when we all had strep and all the snow days this year, we were able to, like, go through some of these. And honestly, some of them are Bible overviews. It's like, wow, this is brand new information to me. Like, they really do have good content in them. So watching the Bible Project and being able to talk about, what do you think about this, or why do you think that happened, and, you know, does that answer questions, or does it bring up more questions, and what do we want to do about those? So we see our confidence at the end of the day comes from God. We are not superior parents, and that's why we're going to produce superior kids. We struggle like everyone else. But God is on our side. And when we really tap into his love for us, that does silence our fears. It is a sufficient answer. We also see that in my frantic worry to develop kids that are going to be okay, I teach them to also be scared. And yet God says, I actually have a lot of direction that would really help. And tonight or today was just like a small sampling of some of the things that God speaks to. But he gives us a lot of creativity and ideas, and, like, this is the general direction we want to move in. Lastly, we have community to work all this out with. So what a provision. Man, you know, my son is struggling with lying again. What did you do in that situation? How do I handle it? How much of this is age appropriate? When is this going to be a big problem? Talking to other people. I know that lying is not right, but I don't know how to convince my son to stop doing it. I don't, you know the words or when to you know, disciplined for that or not disciplined for that. And being able to just hash that out with other people who are thinking about similar things is so helpful. I tried these 10 approaches. Please tell me you've tried something else that I can try. One thing that's real helpful is I have a neighbor, and just getting to talk, like, what do you think about this situation? I have tried all of these things with my child, and it's not making any, I'm not gaining any ground. And have her say, you know, I wonder if you might actually have a blind spot here. And saying, like, okay, yeah, I'm sure I do have blind spots in my parenting, and it's okay for you to say that to me. You're allowed to give me some input. And she has, like, really astute observations about my kids, things that I would not have come to because, I don't know, I just don't see them that way. And being able to invite input from people that you trust, people that you feel like are going to say things that are helpful, or even if they're not helpful, but just having another set of eyes in the situation gives us a broader view of what our kids are going through. So when we have fears, when we have problems, when we have setbacks, talking to our community and making the most of that. What do you think I should do in this situation? What have I missed that I keep coming up against this? And being able to share in some of that all together. If anything, it's helpful to go to a friend and say, I've been so afraid of this happening. And her be like, yeah, I've had that too, but I think we're going to be okay, and here's some things we can do about it. It really frees us from those paralyzing, you know, cloud of negative emotion that we can kind of get stuck in. So the more we learn and grow in our relationship with God and find ways to understand and apply his love to our lives, the more freed up we're going to be to show that love to our kids and give them some direction and hope that, yeah, things in life are going to be really messy, but we're going to be okay, and we're going to get through it, and we do have some good resources and help as we're trying to work it out. So that's what I have, some ideas on confidence. I'm sure there's a lot more we could say. But do you guys have any thoughts or anything come to mind, any questions, any ideas? Abby.
So I've been recently reading this book, The Coddling of the American Mind, and it's all about how, like, kids in college today are unprepared for, like, difficult life circumstances because we've tried to protect them, like, overprotect them,
yeah,
basically. So I really liked the points that you were making. Well, it talks about how these kids are really unprepared for, like, how difficult life actually is. And so I like the stuff you were bringing up about that, like, bad circumstances will happen. Not that we need to expect every bad circumstance to happen, but we should expect that difficult things will happen, and how will we help our kids work through that? How will we work through that so they can see us working through that? And I liked that, bring that back to the Psalm verse that you had, like, the when the earthquake happens, when the waves roar or whatever. And I think in our culture today it would be, well, how can I make the earthquake not happen? How can I make the waves not roar? Rather than, well, when these happen, God is our refuge and our strength. It's so called, like, countercultural. And I think our culture sees something wrong with that.
Right.
Because that book is totally secular, but it's non-Christian, but they don't know exactly the solution there. And we have this great solution. When this stuff happens, God is our refuge, God is our strength, and showing that to our kids. So I just really liked that point.
That's awesome.
Reiterate that.
Yeah, that's sweet. Go ahead, Paula.
One thing I've done with my kid is I made an identity book for him. So I took a lot of these scriptures about who God is and how he sees us and then put his picture on
that's
each
cool.
page.
Yeah.
And then the Bible verses that correspond with it. And right now he's really locked in on heaven.
Yeah.
And that how God's going to wipe away every tear from our eyes. And we've been, will Zacchaeus be in heaven? Yeah, he's 7. Can I climb a sycamore tree with him, you know, and talk with him? I said, sure. Yeah. You know, and so we just have these conversations about heaven, and that's a really cool, and, you know, isn't that a coping mechanism, right, that God gives us for going through difficult times?
Absolutely.
Is to be like, this is just temporary, and
doesn't
one day
have to be like this
it's all
going to
be gone.
Yep.
So, and I was just actually sitting here thinking, like, I need to make one for me. You know, like, the things that paralyze me as a mom, to, like, apply these same truths to myself in a way that I can look at a picture of myself and be like, that's true about you. Because I can't stand in front of a mirror all day and say that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm like, I need to apply these things to myself.
That's awesome. There's a book, too. The author who wrote Heaven, Randy Alcorn, writes Heaven for Kids. And I got it at the library, and the first chapter is about how grandma dies. And I was like, oh, we'll skip that part and just go on to the good stuff. But yeah, there are a lot of good resources. And it is, kids do like thinking about heaven. That's awesome. Allie and Allison. All the Allies.
So I like that point that you're making about like anticipating some of the things that our kids are going to run into. And like looking at our culture and the things that our culture is going to try to teach them before we get to them.
Yeah.
And I guess sometimes like I feel like, oh, I kind of know and I do have like an idea of some of the things that are going on and the temptations and what they're going to be bombarded with. But as time goes on, like I also feel like more and more irrelevant to what's going on in our culture. So is there like any advice that you have for like, you know, now and 5 years from now and 10 years from now, like how do you keep your finger on the beat of your culture so that you are prepared?
I definitely think that that's a challenge for sure. There are lots of like research and studies that just show what, you know, that one that we read earlier about anxiety, or the book iGen is a book that has tons of research about what the culture is today or the effect of social media and stuff. So there are different, you know, just literature and research. What are people saying about what's happening right now? But then also having a lot of the play dates come to your house, watching your kids interact with other kids and what they're talking about, or just driving them around and they're talking in the back seat, seeing like, what are my kids like talking about? What do they want to do? Or what are their friends bringing up with them? And we will have to like go through their generation with them and talk as we spend time with their friends. I bet we'll get a beat on it too. But yeah, we'll have to use a lot more creativity because I don't know exhaustively what we should do. Allison.
I really liked your emphasis on our fear is going to bleed into our kids' lives, especially thinking about like the list of things that are happening now, of like kids not wanting licenses, they want to stay at home. And I bet like, you know, in 10 years, I want my kid to stay at home.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy because it plays into my own fears of like, yeah, please stay at home. Let's hang out, you know. And it's just really easy, I think, to kind of be like, oh, I'm a fearful and anxious person and be content with that. Almost like, well, you know, I'm an adult. This is the way I am.
Or I'm fated to be like this.
Exactly. Yeah. And just realizing, like, I feel like this really just brings up the urgency of like, no, these are character issues that we need to take to the Lord.
Yeah.
And grow in our dependence and confidence in him, not just for our own personal faith, but for the faith of our children.
Yeah, as we gain ground in some of our fears, then we can show our kids how to gain ground in that. And I think that there is a chronic level of fear and stress that we will just operate with, and we will need to learn how to manage and stuff. But we'll also have to observe, is my stress getting to a level that is more than it should be, more than the normal? And should I seek help for that? That there are times in your life where the little years, I needed a little bit more help, and then I was okay, and I could manage on my own for a while, and whatever. But that we will cycle through times where we need to take some of our fears or our anxiety more seriously, and other times where we can use the tools at our disposal, and that should be sufficient. But yeah, absolutely. There's a good teaching on anxiety and parenting, too, that Amy did. Yeah, Betsy.
Something that I feel like God's been getting at in my life with parenting and fear is that a lot of times my fears are things like idols in my life that are kind of being shaken. So like with my kids, when she's not doing good at school, I fear, what is the teacher going to think about me? Or other parents going to think about me when my son is acting like a maniac and beating up on their kids, things like that. So it's like looking at God's like, what's really going on is you're afraid of, you know, something's being shaken here, and I have to go to him about that and really think, okay, you're right. I want to appear a certain way, or my comfort's at stake here because I know I'm going to have to do more work with my daughter at home, you know, with homework or something like that. And so that's been really helpful to kind of sort that out and know, like, this is my issue. And yeah, God wants to help my kids grow, but there's something at stake here. And he wants to fill that void. He's like, I want to remove that need for affirmation from your peers or something. And he's like, I want you to go to me about that. So it's been really good.
That's awesome. When our kids don't behave, are we worried that they have a behavior problem, or are we worried how it reflects on us? And then we realize, I have some more inner working I need to process through in order to even better parent the behavior issue that just came up. Yeah, thanks for saying that. That's awesome. Yeah.
There's a secular book, The Three P's of Parenting, and I'm only in, I think it's Power, So kids want to have like a sense of power. And that author really ties responsibility to power. So I like what you did here with responsibility of just teaching them that aspect of life and growing them through that. But I don't know, that just kind of solidified some of that connection too of empowering our kids through these responsibilities they have.
Yeah. So our culture, you know, a lot of, there's big emphasis on comfort right now in our culture, and we can provide actual a nice level of comfort for our kids. You know, they're not in a really hurting or damaging life situation. Like, we have warm homes and we have good food on the table, and like, we can provide for them, which is awesome. But we don't want it to be so comfortable that they don't realize that they are agents and they can do something. What they do is significant and it can matter. And some of that is just working in a family dynamic to produce a good atmosphere with siblings and relating, and you know, your contribution does matter. Yeah. That's awesome.